Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning's scripture reading is taken from Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 and 13 and 17 to 22. I stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights as I had done the first time. And once again, the Lord listened to me. The Lord was unwilling to destroy you. The Lord said to me, "Get up and go on your journey at the head of the people, that they may go in and occupy the land that I swore to their ancestors to give to them. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who is not partial and takes no bribe, who executes justice for the orphan and the widow, who loves the strangers, providing them food and clothing. You shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. Him alone you shall worship. To him you shall hold fast, and by his name you shall swear. He is your praise. He is your God, who has done for you these great and awesome things that your own eyes have seen. Your ancestors went down to Egypt 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars in heaven." The word of the Lord.
I noted the plea for more cookies. I grew up in New Jersey. We didn't have cookie tables. And the first time I got here, now we're talking 1993, and I attended a wedding. I wasn't even doing it. I attended a wedding. And I saw this people bringing stuff to the wedding and then going over to the side, little place to the side of the reception. And I looked in there, and it started about there and ended about there. And there must have been 50, 100 dozen of cookies, and then with stacks of things for you to make a selection and take home. I had no idea that I had entered paradise. Oh, my heavens. I've gotten in the fashion of having what I call a blurb before the sermon, which is something basically that occurred to me after I wrote the sermon and I couldn't find a place to put it in, so I just do it by itself. I've seen the movie Oppenheimer twice. Recently, I read an extended interview with the director in the publication The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And he talked about his inspiration for the film lying in a fundamental shift of science in the 20th century. It was a shift where the very large and the very small, the macro and the micro, were coming to be defined somehow using the same rules. He said, "It's what's in the middle that gets a bit complicated. The interactions lying between the two ends of the scale, the world we all live in, are really fascinating." You can say that again. And he does. Billy Collins, who was poet laureate of the United States for a term of 3 years, has a terrific poem. It's called Aristotle, in which he gives wonderful examples of beginnings and middles and ends. This is the beginning. Almost anything can happen. This is where you find the creation of light, a fish wriggling onto land, the first word of paradise lost on an empty page. This is early on, before the ark, dawn. The profile of an animal is being smeared on the wall of a cave, and you have not yet learned how to crawl. And so on. And then we have, this is the middle. Things have had time to get complicated, messy, really. Nothing is simple anymore. This is the bridge. the painful modulation. This is the thick of things. So much is crowded into the middle. The guitars of Spain, piles of ripe avocados, Russian uniforms, noisy parties, lakeside kisses, arguments heard through a wall. Too much to name, too much to think about. So much is crowded into the middle. Louise, Emily, and I enjoy visiting our nation's capital every once in a while. Journey takes 4 hours, maybe a little more, depending. But we know that no matter how early we make it out the door, no matter how fast I drive, how carefully I drive, it always takes 2 hours to get to Breezewood. Breezewood, for those of you visiting from California, is a stop on the turnpike. Breezewood calls itself the town of motels. Used to be the traveler's oasis. Breezewood, nestled between the turnpike and Interstate 70, is a classic case of so much is crowded into the middle. An American rest stop at its best, or worst, depending. There are three things you probably didn't know about Breezewood, and therein lies a good illustration about living right in the middle of things. The first is that Breezewood always has been what it is now, a stopping place for travelers. It lies on the east side of a 7-mile-wide valley, which long served as a traditional pathway for Native Americans. When European settlers came, they worked their way west along the same pathway. Ditto for the British troops in colonial times, when the track was improved into a wagon road by General Forbes. They named something after him. In the early 20th century, Breezewood was a popular stopping place for automobile travelers. Route 30, the Lincoln Highway, opened in 1913. Greyhound bus lines had enough regular business to open a post house facility in 1935. In 1940, Breezewood was made exit 6 on the first section of the just opened Pennsylvania Turnpike. This is a little strange because once you got off the turnpike, there wasn't any real place to go. So it must have been because it was time to have another exit. The first new structure, the Gateway Motel and Restaurant, was built then. Breezewood was later renumbered exit 12, but is now 161, following mileage-based exit numbering. Breezewood's real boom came in the 1960s after Interstate 70 from Maryland to the Turnpike was finished. This also got Breezewood called the Gateway to the South. This intersection of I-70, the Turnpike, and US 30 caused major expansion of hotels, fast food, and convenience stores, including truck stops and souvenir stands. Instead of just the old Maple Lawn Inn, now dozens of businesses are all packed in to a 500-yard stretch of highway. The second is that Breezewood's weird connection between Interstate 70 and the Turnpike isn't their fault. It comes from a situation only a lawyer could love. Driving to DC, you exit the Turnpike, drive about a mile and a half on the ramp, then circle on to Route 30 for a few blocks, then turn left onto Interstate 70 and head south. Why not just have a direct link? It is the money. Federal law at the time said you could use federal funds for a direct connection from a toll-free interstate to a turnpike, but only if, when the financing got paid off, you stopped collecting tolls on the turnpike. Well, that wasn't going to go anywhere. Interstate 80 was being completed north, and competition meant that the Turnpike needed to keep collecting all the money it could. So what we get out of this is something for trivia buffs. Interstate 70 actually starts at the end of the long Turnpike off-ramp. It doubles Route 30 until it turns south and goes limited access again. It is, therefore, one of only two places in the country where an interstate has traffic lights. One effect: terrific traffic jams on major travel days. One reporter noted that many drivers trapped in gridlock after giving thanks to a higher authority for their blessings have asked a lower authority to ensure a warm spot in the afterlife for certain highway engineers. Third fact you might not know is that Breezewood isn't really a town at all. It's really an unincorporated village in Bedford County. Bedford itself is one exit to the west. Business Week wrote that Breezewood is perhaps the purest example of a great American tourist trap. Not really. It's not a trap. There's no deception involved. What you see is what they got. And no, you don't have to stop there. But the human digestion system, one end or the other, does seem to notice Breezewood warnings bell, either coming west from Philly or east from the Berg. Over 3 million vehicles a year pass through the village, which is a lot of commercial opportunity. Breezewood has its own zip code, 15533. Population, 180. Some people call it the Las Vegas of roadside strips, a blaze of neon in the middle of nowhere. From the letter to the Hebrews, let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Sermons, as opposed to travel guides, usually involve people, their hopes, their dreams, their sins, their virtues, their apostasy, their faithfulness. I've talked about Breezewood, and I expect that the picture most of us have about it isn't particularly flattering. It's a place born out of necessity, perhaps, but in its execution, reflecting lots of the sad glitz of American roadside all in a third of a mile. To really understand Breezewood and why we should, we have to look a little deeper. We have to look in a mirror and see, perhaps indistinctly, something about faith and something about love as it actually works in the world. Cindy Weichert got a job at the Post House cafeteria, mainly because of her sister and her aunt, who worked there since the place opened in 1931. Joe Biden, no relation, and his brothers used to run it back then. The Post House closed in 2004, so Cindy went to work down the street at the Gateway, or the Big G, as they say. Kind of figured I'd retire from there, but it just didn't work out that way, she said, her blue wiping cloth skimming table 14. Cindy's day starts about 4 in the morning. She lives a few miles west, drives Route 30 to the restaurant to arrive by 5 a.m., start of her 9-hour shift. She used to wear a greyhound blue dress with a starched white collar, sometimes with a matching cardigan. Now the G provides a green bib to go over her own white shirt and black skirt or slacks. No jeans, please. 5 o'clock is the middle of the trucker shift, and she knows many of the regulars who prefer the G to the truck stop next door. She likes most of them, even though the guys from the long haul companies like to give her a hard time. She returns the attitude, says, "I like the attention, and they tip better." Has she waited on anyone famous in the restaurant? Neil Diamond, she says, without hesitation. He came in once when he was going to Philly and his bus needed fixed. He was real nice. I mean, you knew who he was, but he had coffee like everybody else and apple pie. He signed a picture for Joe Jr., but they took it when they left. Anyone else? Well, there was Billy Snyder, who was engaged to my sister, but he was only famous for getting in the newspaper. For what? Well, he and his brothers, they bought a bunch of lottery tickets, and they split them up, and his brother hit big and wouldn't share, and they had this big fight in court. But Billy, he didn't get anything. His brother got it all. I guess that's pretty famous for around here. She goes about her work with a fluid grace that comes from knowing a lot about serving food and even more about people. She serves fried chicken, whipped potatoes with gravy, corn, homestyle mac and cheese, and spinach. She used to stack plates on her arms, but now uses a big tray with a wet towel on it. She serves oatmeal cookies, three on a plate. She serves coffee, tea, milk, hot chocolate, Diet Coke. She gives people extra butter and their salad dressing on the side. She uses an order pad, but she hardly needs it. I know what people want, she says. Sometimes I can tell before they open their mouth. It's a feeling you get. Here's a man who looks like coffee and chocolate ice cream. Still, she likes it there. The business is steady, even if it means there's not a lot of downtime. In the post house, she says, you'd have three buses all at once pull in, and then just like that, you'd have 100-150 people, and everyone wants something right now. It was, she says, feast or famine for us. She knows that people mainly come to the G to eat, but they buy souvenirs too. Not really the here I am in Breezewood stuff. They buy souvenirs for Washington because they figure even though they've got 2.5 hours to go at least, it's cheaper here. And they're probably right. My favorite, she says, is students on field trips. Their parents give them money, so if they're headed home and they stop here, they'll try to spend every last dime. It's really cute when some kid looks up at me and says, what can I get for $2.47? Cynthia Weichert, just your everyday angel, working at the G in a neon oasis in the middle of nowhere. Now, here's the deal about Breezewood. It's everywhere. Everywhere. And the people who work there are everywhere. Look closely. You'll see. They don't care where you came from. Though if you're from Pittsburgh and you open your mouth, they can usually tell. They don't care where you're going either. Although they might ask, and if they do, everyone tells them. They serve old people, young people, people suffering from raging hormones and other people who wish they had some. People who will go on diets the next day, they swear. And people who were on a diet, but not today, honey. They serve Marines coming home and National Guard troops heading out. They serve Roman Catholic hamburgers on Fridays. Presbyterians who take forever to make up their minds, and Jews who usually don't have ham and cheese. And they serve people who come there every morning, ones that come every time they drive from Pittsburgh to Princeton, ones that have never been there before. And it doesn't make any difference if you're a regular or not. Chances are they're not going to get rich or famous working at the G, or the McDonald's, or the Comfort Inn, or the Blue Beacon truck wash. Even though every once in a while, a Neil Diamond will happen by and give them a picture for the wall. They're not usually going to be people you remember, because like all real life angels, they work their errands of grace in ordinary places at all times of the day and night. consider if you will, that Breezewood is a not that bad example of the church in the world. It's found at the intersections of this life, in the crowded middle of things. It's got a story about how it got to be that way. Some people will find the bright lights to be a beacon in the middle of their night, and others won't like the glare. And the people we find there are just like us. People in the business of serving others, day in, day out, sun, snow, sleet, or whatever. Paul writes this: I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith God has assigned. Let love be genuine, he says. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, I'm not going to suggest that you rename this place Breezewood Angels Church, but I do think we'd all do well to remember that our calling, our job, our business in this place is to be servants of our friends and neighbors. And that is, we are reminded again and again and again and again, that is how we show our love for God. And last piece of advice, if you do eat in Breezewood, please tip well. Amen.